worth just $150,000. You're getting all that electronically, Steve. So you can ask questions at dozens of AGMs each year for his latest venture, themainreport.com. This is a daily video blog and shareholder activism newsletter. It was launched last week. We've actually had to upgrade all our computers so we can listen to it from the office. Stephen's asked questions at more than 250 AGMs over the past decade. During the AGM season, which finishes today, he hectored companies including his old favourite News Corp, Guns, BBL, Coles, Alco Finance Group, Fortescue Metals, WA News, Woolworths and Macquarie Radio. Stephen attended the Walkley Awards in Sydney last night, and we can confirm that Glenn Mill didn't push him off the stage. Please welcome Stephen Mayne for a look at what happened during the AGM season just finished, and for his health check on the true state of corporate governance in Australia. Stephen Mayne.
Well, thanks very much, Michael. I can report back that Glenn Milne wasn't at the Walkleys last night. He was meant to be, but he had to fly off to Matt Price's funeral at the last minute. So I flew my cameraman to Sydney, and we were vox-popping Ray Martin and all these, Mark Scott, the CEO of the ABC. And the only vision I wanted to get was me giving Glenn some migraine medication tablets, which is what he blamed for last year's assault. But unfortunately, he was a no-show. Now, Michael's picked a very busy time to ask for a summary of the annual reporting or annual meeting season, because today is literally the busiest day of the year for annual meetings, the last day of the year, so all the penny dreadfuls have their AGMs today. And I have to admit, I was looking forward to getting stuck into Fairfax this morning up in Sydney. And so I went up to the CEO at the Walkleys last night, David Kirk, and I said, "Oh, Kirky, I'm coming off the long run. I've got my 10 questions ready. I look forward to seeing you." So I basically told him a lie that Michael Walsh has got me coming down here instead. And I've just been having some SMSs with the spin doctor from Macquarie Communications Group in Sydney as well. Their AGM started 20 minutes ago, saying the same thing. "I'll be there. I've got my questions ready. Looking forward to seeing you." And of course, unfortunately, I'm not going to be there. But I will be at the Symbian AGM at 2:30. Over the road at the concert hall. And you might remember Media Watch a couple of weeks ago did over Matthew Stevens, a journalist on The Australian, for writing and posing questions in the Oz that should be asked of primary healthcare's boss, Ed Bateman. And I can tell you that I've actually had a similar email from the primary side last night giving me 10 questions that I can ask the Symbian boys this afternoon. So I thought in the interest of transparency, I'd better disclose that, and I will indeed be going down there and asking a couple of them shortly. Now, the other thing that came out of the Walkleys last night was I finally got a compensation payment for News Limited for my physio bill. I went to New York and harassing Rupert for my $65 physio bill for my sprained ankle from the Walkleys last year. And I went to Adelaide as well after the News AGM in New York and said, "Come on, Rupert, can you apologise and pay my physio bill?" And he refused. But last night at 1 o'clock in the morning, I got a compensation payment out of James Hardy. And that's because the former spin doctor for James Hardy, Greg Baxter, is now the spin doctor for News Corporation, and he actually gave me $70 cash last night at 1 a.m. So I have a compensation payment out of James Hardy as well. Now, I'm not a guru on the ESG space. I'm more coming at this from a financial journalism background and from a straightforward accountability point of view. So my big drive is just if something goes wrong, that there's some accountability shown and that there's transparency in the accounts. And I've been getting more into the ESG space a little bit this year. I went to the big Business Council for Sustainable Energy conference this year for a couple of days, and I have started asking a few questions in this space. But I have to admit that the green movement in Australia is very well advanced. I mean, I'm very critical of the lack of a culture of shareholder pressure in Australia. But the two areas where it is quite advanced is the way that the green movement has used AGMs in the past and the way the union movement has used AGMs in the past. So I sort of look at it from a point of view, I'm not going to crowd them out of their space. But it does. A few issues do come up, and I'll just take you through a couple of them that's just happened from this AGM season. First one was Woolies. I went up there and basically we heard from the tobacco lobbyists, we heard about the mislabeled tissues. And I got up and said, "What are you doing with pokies?" the end of the day, Woolies is the largest poker machine company in Australia. They've got 11,000 poker machines. And it's a very dangerous product, and there's an awful lot of misery being caused. Australians are the world's biggest gamblers per capita. And our biggest retailer also happens to be our biggest poker machine merchant. And I was absolutely stunned when the CEO, Michael Luscombe, claimed, after I quoted all these statistics at him, that there are just as many problem gamblers from lottery tickets as there are from poker machines. And I mean, all of the research just shows that this is absolute rubbish, and that poker machines are about 80% of the cause of problem gambling in Australia. So I did find that pretty disappointing to hear that from a major CEO in an area which I think, an ESG area that I think really deserves a lot more attention. Then there was the question of Perpetual. Perpetual's been the largest shareholder in Gunns for close to a decade, and I've never ever heard them mentioned in the press. It's never come up at a Perpetual AGM. So this year we had a happy coming together of the independent candidate in Wentworth, Danielle Acuia, wanting some publicity, and I was there as well. So we actually managed to, I wouldn't say hijack the Perpetual AGM, but turn it into an interesting debate about what Perpetual is doing with Gunns. And just making the point that you own 15% of the company. Gunns, no matter how you look at it, are an absolute cowboy company from a governance point of view, from an environmental point of view, sustainability. Longest serving board in the country, you know, average length of service, 14 years. They do renovations to the Premier's home. They sue their critics. I mean, you name it, they do it. And basically stood up and said, Perpetual, what have you ever done to tame this tiger at Gunns? Not on, you know, the environmental assessments of the pulp mill, but just on the broader governance issues right across the whole company. And it was the usual sort of, well, we have a few private conversations about it. But they got themselves mentioned on, you know, Late Line Business, on PM, in the papers, and for the first time, Perpetual actually had to face up to the issue that they, as the largest shareholder in Gunns with 15%, they had some responsibilities to drive some better performance and more transparency, and hopefully we will see that. We then had the Gunns AGM itself in Launceston, which was a staggering affair, I have to say. I urge you all to read Richard Flanagan's cover story in the Monthly from May, where he basically documented a whole range of things, you know, the whole Gunns horror story. And I read that on the way down there and basically stood back for a while, and literally 20 different green advocates got up and raised a whole series of specific questions about the pulp mill and the research and the emissions and all that sort of stuff. And then the chairman actually shut down the meeting before we dealt with all the resolutions. So, I mean, I've never seen a more inarticulate chairman as John Gay. He literally can't chair a meeting. And, he also was, until 2 years ago, the only executive chairman in the country who wasn't facing an election every 3 years. Now, every other executive chairman was putting themselves up for election except for John Gay. So I think one of the great things that will come from a change of government is hopefully Gunns being tamed in a range of ways, in a political way, his shareholders rising up and actually ensuring that the company behaves a lot better than it has over the past. The highlight for me from the AGM season was the News Corp AGM in New York, where I, for the first time, put up a shareholder resolution. Now, in Australia, it's very difficult because you need 100 signatures to get a shareholder resolution up. And in America, you only need $2,000 worth of shares to put a resolution up. So I put a resolution up proposing to get rid of Rupert's gerrymander, which is a situation where 70% of News Corp shares don't have a vote. And it was, I ran a few populist arguments, you wanted to spread democracy to Iraq, why can't we spread democracy to News Corp? And it was interesting, in terms of pressure groups that were there, the tobacco lobby was there in New York. Well done for not having much tobacco presence in your films. The family lobby was there complaining about sort of some soft porn on Fox TV in the US. And then it was basically this gerrymander issue. And the whole meeting only lasted about an hour and 20 minutes, which I sort of find amazing. Rupert's the most powerful guy in the world. You would have thought the anti-war lobby would be there. You would have thought there'd be a whole bunch of outraged Democrats would be there about Fox News. But no, it was a very minor sort of thing. 25 registered shareholders in New York. And 4 weeks later in Adelaide, he had 350 registered shareholders. So it's funny how shareholder activism doesn't really resonate in New York. But 60% of the independent shares backed my resolution. And so you took Rupert's shares out, you took Malone's shares out, and it was $5 billion worth of stock, saying, yes, we should all have one vote, one value. Let's have some democracy at News Corp. And I have to say, this was totally because of ISS. ISS recommended a vote in favour of this. They don't like gerrymanders. And this was quite a shot across the bows for Rupert. Now, Rupert tried to strike out the resolution. He wrote back, News wrote back to me after I put it up saying, you know, it's not, you know, not valid for a whole bunch of technical reasons, which I don't understand about Delaware law. And the good old SEC actually stepped in and said no. So over there in America, to get a resolution up, if a company wants to knock it off, they have to write to the SEC and give reasons. And the SEC wrote back and said, no, this resolution's right. So the SEC actually backed me up. And if you contrast that with what happened with Qantas this year, where the Transport Workers Union put up six resolutions, which were excellent resolutions, going to a whole range of governance issues about what happens in a private equity takeover situation, the flow of information, the management of conflicts, a whole series of resolutions, most of which would have been majority supported by the institutional shareholders. And Qantas just summarily rejected them, just said, we've had our own legal advice, nah, we knock out these resolutions. So it's little things like that where I think you can look to other jurisdictions and say, there are a lot better ways to make shareholder engagement a more effective thing. And it's quite a tragedy, I think, that there's only been eight different shareholder resolutions put up in Australia over the last 10 years. I mean, the US have literally hundreds a year. Every church group, environmental group, unions, they literally put up hundreds of resolutions a year because you only need one, you know, $2,000 shareholding to do that. In Australia, we've had, you know, four nuisance EGMs in 15 years. So four times an EGM has been called with the 100 signatures. And only eight resolutions, you know, Boral, Rio Tinto, Combank, NAB, Boral again, NAB, BlueScope, CBA again. So I simply say that with a new Labor government, one of the first things we've got to do, one of the highest priorities, is to lower the barrier to allow shareholders to put up resolutions. And that would be resolutions on sustainability, resolutions on governance, resolutions on pay. Why should the directors have a monopoly over the resolutions that are voted on at an AGM? And I have to say, I'm absolutely excited about what's happened on Saturday with the change of government for a range of reasons. The first of which is John Faulkner becoming Special Minister of State is going to absolutely clean up the operations of government, which I think a lot of people would agree have been degraded in some ways over the last 11 years. This will give the Federal Parliament a greater deal of moral authority to... I've got 5 minutes to go. A greater deal of moral authority to actually drive through better corporate governance at a corporate level. And I think it's terrific that Nick Sherry has got the specific responsibility for superannuation and corporate governance going forward. And you've got a whole range of important Labor politicians who are very passionate about this corporate governance area and very literate on the area. I mean, Stephen Conroy is terrific. Penny Wong, real rising star, has taken a keen interest in it. Greg Combay and Bill Shorten have both sat on multi-billion dollar funds and learnt the ways of the funds management industry. Kevin Rudd has been talking up the funds management industry probably more than any other, I think you could say, in terms of tax policies and just advocacy for the industry. You've got Greens in balance of power in the Senate, which is also a terrific outcome in terms of greater corporate accountability. And my old mate Nick Xenophon is going to be an absolute tour de force as another person sharing the balance of power in the Senate. I've been to a couple of AGMs with Nick. He's very interested in shareholder advocacy. I helped him, gave him his proxy to go to the, to go to the Commonwealth Bank AGM this year and ask a couple of questions. And Nick Xenophon is a fantastic advocate for cleaning up political practices and cleaning up corporate practices. So if you consider all of those things coming together, and I think we literally are potentially sitting on the cusp of a golden age in terms of both corporate transparency, the whole ESG debate, and engagement with shareholders. And there's a parliamentary committee which is currently taking submissions on the specific issue of shareholder engagement, which is the first time. I put a submission in, a whole range of other people have. And previously, we haven't seen much sort of engagement with this. I remember Penny Wong bailing me up at the ABC last year and saying, well, we're having this sort of committee at the moment, and there was a proposal to reduce the number of signatures required for a shareholder resolution to 20. But literally, no one came out and supported it. Not one person. So where were you? And I said, I'm sorry, I just missed it. And no one else came out and actually put forward the proposition that we need to lower that barrier. So I think that this time around, the industry funds, I mean, think about this for a moment. The industry funds have had one politician going for them more than anyone else for the last decade, and that's been Senator Grant Chapman from South Australia, who I think many people would say has sort of been pushing the barrow of a few financial planners. And he's out. He lost his seat courtesy of the Xenophon push. So the guy who was trying to tear down the industry funds is gone, He's replaced with someone who's passionate about shareholder activism and accountability. And I think it's these sort of things that are going to be a real force in terms of what happens from here. The greatest thing that happened in the past AGM season was the voting on remuneration reports. Telstra's report getting voted down, and I was a guest of Phil Burgess at the Walkers last night, sat next to him for a couple of hours. He's obviously still not very happy about his remuneration report being voted down, and he was giving me long lectures about how, you know, Telstra's 80% of their fleet is now on gas, and they've done all these great things on CSR. They released their CSR report last week. No one in the Australian media is interested. We have to sell our story overseas, and, you know, we are the best telco in the world. All around the world, other telcos are looking at us on ESG and CSR, but in Australia, we can't generate enough interest in it. Everyone wants to talk about Sol's pay and remuneration reports. And I sort of felt a little bit sorry for him, but I think, you know, the pay is pretty outrageous, and the board needs to take the heed of what the shareholders have said. So finally, in terms of what needs to happen legislatively, and I think that the non-binding vote on remuneration reports is working a treat. It's forced the market to address the issue. It's forced the companies to address their pay practices. We have the independent proxy advisors giving expert advice on that. There is excellent information on the market, out in the market. The shareholders are making well-informed decisions on remuneration. There are big against votes on remuneration. It is working spectacularly well. The thing I would love to see happen now is the same thing with sustainability reports. Non-binding votes on sustainability reports, because at the moment there is still a bit of an asymmetry in information, that there's not enough information. The bad companies on ESG are not putting the information out there. The good guys who are in this room are doing the right thing and telling us about it, but they've got the good story to tell. So we need the compulsion of compulsory sustainability reports to drag everyone up to a higher standard level, improve the information gap, a little bit of extra funding on the analyst side. I mean, there's been some good things coming out of some of the funds, but I think particularly on the broking side, some more Elaine Pryor of the world. Amanda McCluskey at CBA is also doing a great job, but we need another 10 of them feeding the information out there, compulsory sustainability reports, non-binding votes, and I think that would be the creme de la creme in terms of the ESG movement going forward. And I think with all the stars lining up in terms of what happened last Saturday, we all should be looking forward to a golden era going ahead, and I think that the 2008 annual reporting season will only be better than we've just had. So look, thanks very much for listening. I know I'm out of time, and enjoy the rest of the awards.
Thanks very much, Stephen, and really sort of driving that home on a positive note too. I thought it was terrific, and opinionated as well. compulsively opinionated. Sustainably compulsively opinionated. We've got time for some questions. Anyone have a question or a comment for Stephen? What percentage did you get on Saturday?
2%. I should say, my 35th tilt at elections, I ran against Peter Costello. I'm sorry, Graham. Again, I was running on a wind back the banks power platform. So I'm sorry about that. I love Graham. Graham is a great guy. But yeah, 2% wasn't very popular. In fact, Costello's senior advisor rang me up and said, Glenn Milne is coming around to assault you now because you've put in your flyers and on your how to vote cards about, you know, Milne is a Costello backer and only 2% have voted for you. So clearly the people of Higgins are giving a green light for another assault. So anyway.
Was there a question over there?
No, I voted for it.
Oh, one of the 1,200. Thank you. You'll get a free subscription to the main report.
That's a disenchanted voter. Didn't move. Anyone else? Question?
Liberals in the room?
Yes.
Yes, I have a question. What is going to be the fallout of the Telstra vote? It's non-binding at the moment, but the 2008 reporting season, what headway do you think you'll make politically and in a journalistic sense?
Well, Burgess's argument was that the Future Fund was just punishing them on behalf of the government, and without the Future Fund doing that, they wouldn't have had the two-thirds vote. The institutions and the proxy advisors were partly punishing Telstra for not putting Sol Trujillo's specific incentive package to the vote. They used the exemption and the listing rule to avoid that. And so I think that listing rule exemption, which a number of companies are doing, is disappointing. The next step has to be directors getting votes against them. So they were particularly belligerent at Telstra in terms of, they're giving a nod to the fact that we need to listen. So Charles Masick and the other people on the Remuneration Committee, when they next come up, the next step is for against votes on them if they don't show they've taken some action. I think that's the other really big thing missing in the market is bad directors being weeded out. We need more information on measuring the performance of directors. It's fantastic on pay at the moment. It's getting better on sustainability, but measuring performance of directors is the big gap. And I've heard some whispers that there is some research being done which will improve this. And I think you are going to see bigger against votes with directors going forward, which would probably be a healthy thing, because at the moment I average 15%, everyone else averages 99%.
Another question up here.
Steve, at the risk of being a supporter of Phil Burgess, which I'm not, but doesn't he have a point? If companies are doing great things on the environment, why is it the media doesn't cover them?
Well, I think that it's just not part of the culture of our media. I think, you know, the Herald Sun, Australia's biggest selling newspaper, Andrew Bolt and Terry McCrann, still climate change sceptics, despite the decree from on high from Rupert, Prius-driving Rupert, that we've all gone carbon neutral at news. So I think that... Ron Walker, you know, there aren't really powerful green advocates within the big media companies. I mean, Kerry Stokes, the chairman of Seven, owns the Caterpillar franchise and makes, you know, is worth more than $1 billion worth of business flogging heavy machinery to the mining industry. So, you know, Ron Walker wants to do nuclear power. I just think that, I think it's got to come from the top too. I think that in the UK you've seen the media lead the way on climate change debate. And I think once we see some changes in Canberra, you will see it improve substantially. But I agree, the media has missed this one, and the media has let down the community. And the community made a big statement on Saturday in terms of driving corporates. And I think the media's got some catching up to do, and hopefully that will be led by the political changes in Canberra now making it flavour of the month, which it clearly is going to be. But John Howard, with a sceptic like that sitting there, and he was the most available political leader in the world. The Howard government ministers saturated the media. That was their strategy. No other government in the world did you see more ministers doing more time on media. And they were against it. They weren't interested in CSR, ESG. So I think that will now change. And Burgess has got a point, and hopefully it's going to improve.
Ethical Investor had a report on a report that released by Telstra during the election campaign identifying $6 billion in possible carbon savings from further rollout.
Yeah, absolutely.
Final question for Stephen.
No, you've got plenty of awards to get through. Let's wind it up.
Thanks, Stephen.
All right, thank you.